That was fast.
I was already on it.
Okay.
Oh no, I closed out my tab.
No. Well, luckily you don't do-
so you'll be
okay. I got it back. Let's do yours first this time.
Oh, okay. When am I going to welcome Llama anyway?
No.
What if Llama jump into this one? Landon is tired.
I don't want to be here.
I'm losing my mind. My laptop hated me. I was about to break it.
My laptop has been hating me for months now.
Okay, well, I am going to be covering the Axeman.
Spooky.
Starting in 1918. That was fucking long ago.
1918.
Yeah.
That's great.
Over a period of roughly 18 months, the city of New Orleans and surrounding areas were rocked by a serial killer that would later go by the name Axeman. The Axeman was the manifestation of the boogeyman lurking in shadows of New Orleans, almost exclusively attacking at night, and is possibly responsible for 12 attacks and 6 killings in a chilling fashion. He only seemed to strike people when they slept in their beds. The Axeman eerily never used his own tools. He only used what he could find at hand in the victim's household, which was usually an axe, and then left behind at the scene of the crime, because everybody back then had an axe.
Seriously?
Apparently. Because they always killed them with their axe. On May 23rd, 1918, at 4901 Manitoba Street, the first Axeman attack occurred. Catherine and Joseph Mongo was struck violently by an axe and then a straight razor used to slit their throats.
Sounds like fun.
Catherine was almost entirely decapitated. It just lifts up the body, the head falls off. And Joseph had suffered many severe injuries. The bodies were discovered by Joseph's brothers, who lived in the same house. Nothing was seen or heard, and no valuables were taken. The bottom panel of the kitchen door was knocked out, and that was found was an axe.
Fun.
A little over a month later, on June 28th, near the corner. Yeah, I'm not even gonna try and say these streets. Another attack occurred. A severely injured Lois Bessemer and Ann Lowe were discovered by a banker named John Zenga, making morning deliveries. John would actually survive. Oh no. Wait. Lois would actually survive. I'm good. Lois would actually survive the attack, and Anne would survive another 7 weeks before dying. And supposedly, told the police that a large white man with a hatchet attacked them. The bottom of the bottom panel of the bedroom door was missing. Once again, a bloody axe was left at the scene.
So, like, is he using axes that people have in their homes?
Yes. He's taking their axes.
So, either he's planning this out and, like, finding out who has axes, or just everyone has axes in their house.
I mean, it was 1918. They didn't have anything.
just literally everyone has an axe. If he walks into a house and there's just not an axe, does he just leave?
I don't know. Oh shit, wrong house. Hold on.
I mean,
it's your lucky day.
And you don't have an axe, you get to live.
You think everybody would like soil where the axes?
Nope.
Just go. Keep them. Hold on. About a month later on August. What?
You said I'm not going to get killed or anything.
Right, I'm going to throw my axe out. On August 5th, in an undisclosed house, Mrs. Ed Schneider was found by her husband in the afternoon at their house. Mrs. Schneider was alive and taken to the charity hospital and would reportedly survive the attack upon them. Investigation. Also, there was an axe missing from their shed. And you know how this woman survives? Yeah. She also gives birth to a kid a week later.
That's a good story to tell your friends when you get older.
Yo, my mom was cut in the head with an axe and then she gave birth to me.
A week after.
5 days later, on August 10th, 80-year-old Joseph Roboto was found by his niece Pauline and Mary after they heard him struggling. His head was bashed, and the two girls allegedly saw the attacker and described him as tall, dark, heavyset, and wearing a dark suit with a slouch hat. Joseph would die 2 days later.
Fun.
Mm-hmm. A newspaper wrote, armed men are keeping watch over the sleeping families while the police are trying to solve the mysteries of the axe attack. Extra police are being put to work daily. So basically cops. Nearly 7 months later, on March 10th, 1919, a family was attacked. The mother, Rose, woke to her husband, Charles, fighting the Axeman. A fight Charles would lose, and the two-year-old daughter, Mary, would also be attacked. Rose and Charles would survive the attack, but the daughter tragically did not. In typical Axeman fashion, the axe used belonged to the family. Like, why wouldn't they get rid of their axes?
Because people are stupid.
Thank you, Brandon.
You're welcome.
A newspaper received a letter from the axe man. Quoted, "Hell, March 13th, 1919. Esteemed mortal, they have never caught me, and they will never. And they never will. They have never seen me, for I am invisible. Even as the ether which surrounds your earth, I am not a human being, but a spirit. And a fell demon from hottest hell. I am what you Olenians and your foolish police call the Axeman. They have been so utterly stupid." What?
The foolish police.
The foolish police. "They have been so utterly stupid so as to amuse me, not only me, but his satanic majesty. Tell them to beware. Let them not try to discover what I am, for it is better that they were never born than to incur the wrath of the X-Man." Undoubtedly, X-Man.
What? You could have had a better name, like a more creative name.
Yeah.
Yeah, but they didn't.
I know.
Why is everything just like not creative? Like they never have any creative names.
We don't know. If we could go back and talk to all of these serial killers, we would.
We just like they're just like in their secret hideout and we just come in with like cameras and just stuff. I'm like, okay, so what's your story?
Okay, so So, as the cutting open ahead.
We'd probably get murdered, but hey, whatever. You know.
Yeah, at least we get it for the footage.
Yeah.
The content. Undoubtedly, you know Aline saying of me as the most horrible murderer, which I am. But I could not be much worse than... I could be much worse if I wanted to. And I will say, slay thousands of your best citizens, for I am in a close relationship with the Angel of Death. So basically, the Axeman and the Angel of Death are dating.
Ooh.
I ship it.
It's really not. That's a bad idea.
And then a later letter, which would scare all of New Orleans, said, "Now, to be exact, at 12:15 o'clock earthly time, on the next Tuesday night, I'm going to pass over New Orleans in my infinite mercy. I'm going to make a little proposition to the people. Here it is. I am very fond of jazz music."
Do you like jazz?
You like jazz? And I swear by all
Barry B. Benson walks in.
And I swear to all the devils in the nether region that every person shall be spared whose house a jazz band is in full string. I have mentioned that if everybody has a jazz band going well, so much better for the people. One thing is certain, and that is that those people who did not jazz it on Tuesday night, if they're
did not jazz it,
will get the ass. You better jazz it.
You better jazz it or I'll murder you. Imagine your life depending on playing jazz music.
I'm putting jazz music in the background of this episode.
Okay, that's great.
What? On March 19th, 1919, the Tuesday night that said in the that was said in the letter, it said that the city was truly alive that night as people blasted jazz music in their homes, and those who did not have a record player poured into local jazz clubs and stayed clear of the Axeman's rage. It's worth mentioning that nobody was killed on March 19th.
So was everyone playing it?
Everybody who had a record player was blasting jazz music, and everybody who didn't have a record player went to a jazz bar.
Interesting.
Watch them have just been out of town.
He just wanted to do that because he had something to do, and he's like, you know what? Let's have a little fun.
He gets back the next week. So what happened Tuesday night? Bro, it was a rage.
Everyone was playing jazz music.
Oh my god, it was the Axeman and the Angel of Death's honeymoon.
Oh, there's a baby coming.
On August 10th, 1919, Steve Boko was badly injured in his house after he awoke to a man next to his bed with an axe. Boko managed to survive the attack, reportedly staggering to a friend's home, who then called the police. Boko did not regain his memory, likely due to the blows to the head. Well, no shit.
Man.
I really expected him to have his memory. In early September on 2128 2nd Street, 19-year-old Sierra Lamo was reportedly attacked by someone who entered through an open window. When she regained consciousness, she could not recall the details of the attack. My foot fell asleep. About 2 months later,
not to fall asleep.
I know you are. About 2 months later, on October 27th, at the corner of South Scotland, Aloha Street, suspected Axeman attacked Esther and Mike Patoa. Esther reportedly awoke around 1 a.m. to her husband screaming and ran to the bedroom. Her husband's head was struck 18 times and died 2 hours later. Esther saw two figures in the bedroom, but couldn't identify them as they fled the scene. A bolt with a heavy note, something used to secure a circus tent, was found at the was one of the apparent weapons. There was a circus nearby that weekend.
Ooh, fun.
Yeah.
So I'm guessing they never found out who the X-Man was.
Nope. But I got some theories for us.
Ooh.
Because
theories.
That was the last attack. The first theory is that perhaps not all of the killings were they woke up an X-Man. Some suspected that the X-Man's presumed final killing of Mike Pepitoa was actually a mafia killing due to Mike Pepitoa's father killing a man in the past.
Did you die?
Yeah. Another X-Man attack that is scrutinized is the second attack on Louis Besumer and Ann Lowe. And if you recall, Louis Besumer was severely injured and his partner was killed in the same attack. Besumer was charged for the murder of Anne in bizarre fashion. Police found that Besumer had written letters back and forth in Yiddish and Russian. They eventually came to the conclusion that Besumer was part of a German spy ring or spy master for the Kesha? Yeah. And the attack had nothing to do with the X-Man. Before dying, Ann Lowe would allegedly blame her partner, Louis Besumer, and said that he was a Nazi spy. They also theorized that this case was a domestic dispute that ended with Louis attacking Ann. Nonetheless, Louis Besumer was acquitted. That there were definitely things that suggested this was the work of the X-Man, mainly the fact that it happened at home while they were asleep with an axe. So, basically...
an axe. Who would have expected that?
Basically, if you wanted to get away with murder around this time, all you had to do was do it while they were sleeping with an axe.
I mean, yeah.
The second thing...
What were they gonna do? Find me?
I mean, that's only their job. The second theory is that, given the context of his letter, some believe that the X-Man might have been a supernatural figure that slipped through tiny entrances and then would become the large man witness describes to be the killer.
No.
He was the Ant-Man.
No. No.
Why?
No. Just no.
And then the third and final theory is, in an actual legit subject, suspect named Joseph Mumfrey.
Joseph Mumfrey. Joseph Mumfrey.
The last attack on Esther and Mike Pepitoa. Esther survived the attack and her husband did not. Esther later moved to Los Angeles and remarried a man named Angelo Alpatona. However, on the second anniversary of her former husband, Mike's death, the current husband, Angelo, disappeared. Esther recalled that before their marriage, Angelo had ended business relationships with a man who went by many names, including Joseph Mumfrey. On December 5th, 1901...
The most intimidating of them all.
Joseph Mumfrey. On December 5th, 1931, Mumfrey visited her home on 554 East 36th Street in Los Angeles. He demanded $500.
Do you need a minute?
I do not. I'm good. $500 and the jewelry, threatening that he would, quote, kill her the same way he had killed her husband. Which one? And that is the tea. but Esther then killed him with a revolver. So it's fine.
It's fine. It's good.
It's fine. She killed him.
Who cares?
So yeah.
It's A-okay.
That is the story of the Axeman of New Orleans. I know. Yeah. Like the most interesting thing you've ever heard.
But really, it's so it's great. Mm-hmm. It's amazing.
Your turn.
Hold on a second. Hold.
I don't wanna.
Are you holding? Are yes. you holding? Okay, good. Hold on. I'm almost ready. So how's
it? I just got ow. My dog just smacked me in my eye. Okay.
But are you ready? Is that? Are you ready for this?
Yeah.
All right. So in 1957, law enforcement that shocked the battered body of a young boy stuffed inside a cardboard box. I should have said what we were doing for.
Yeah.
I didn't explain. That would definitely make sense, wouldn't it?
What story are you?
Hello? Oh, boy in the box. Okay. That shocked Philadelphia. The battered body of a young boy stuffed inside a cardboard box and dumped by the side of a
okay, but was he actually meant to be killed, or did he, like, just die in the box during shipping?
During shipping, are you?
A lot.
What is wrong with you? I know. Unfortunately. Okay, let's continue. Dumped by the side of a road just outside the city. When Philadelphia police found the body, based on a tip called in by a local college student, they had no idea. It was just the beginning of a mystery that is still unsolved to this day. Wow. Scary, am I right?
Mm-hmm.
Scary. Alrighty. While the authorities know that the child who the media named the boy in the box died as a result of multiple blows to the head.
Oh my god, he was killed by the
Axeman. They have no idea how he sustained the fatal injury. Can you shut up? Injuries, despite chasing down countless leads over the course of 6 decades. Investigators still don't know the boy's name and if he was murdered or died accidentally. Yeah, he was accidentally.
Yeah, he just accidentally did that to himself. Oh, you ran into my back? Hold on.
Okay. Causing many to call him America's unknown child. On February 25th, 1957, police, acting on a tip from an informant, discovered a card. Oh, okay, this is just the same thing. Except different words. Over the course of their investigation, detectives received many tips from people who claimed to know the true identity of the boy in the box and how he died. One of these tips came from a woman only known as Martha, who said when she was a girl, her mother, who worked as a librarian, purchased the child and brought him to their home in Philadelphia. According to Martha, her mother told her the boy's name was Jonathan and made him sleep in their dank and dirty basement.
Hold on. Let me just go by
Martha, okay? Okay.
I'll mail them to you.
Yeah. It's that easy. Martha alleges her mother, who had subjected her to sexual abuse, bought Jonathan for the express purpose of doing the same
thing. Oh, yeah.
Sounds like a great person. She also claims Jonathan vomited in the bathtub and her incensed mother smashed the boy against the floor, killing him. After the child died, Martha said she accompanied her mother to get rid of the boy's body somewhere in Philadelphia. While detectives investigated Martha's claims, which came decades after the discovery of the boy, they were unable to find any evidence that proved the information she provided was either true or false. Here's another theory, I guess. These are, like, just theories. One of the most popular theories about the boy in the box is that he was an orphan who lived at a foster home when he died accidentally by either falling out of a window or drowning in a lake. But if he drowned in a lake, he was hit in the head multiple
times. Them fish down there are fingers.
The particular they're really just not having it. The particular theory came from Remington Bristow, a Philadelphia medical examiner. A psychic told him she thought the child had died while he was living in an old mansion that a couple had turned into a foster home. Bristow had already interviewed a husband and wife who ran a children's home out of a mansion when he attended an estate sale at the home in
19- Piper hung up on you.
Guess who has to edit now?
God dang it!
Your dog hung up. That's yes, amazing.
He hit my phone. Like, no. She almost did it again!
That's amazing. Well, oh my lord.
In there, so just pick up where you left off.
Okay. Bristol. Wife ran children's home, say of a mansion, when he attended to stay at the home in 1961. After the family moved away, he said he discovered a bassinet in the house, similar to the sort that would have been packaged in a cardboard box like the one that the priest found the child's body in. Bristow believed the boy was the secret son of the couple's young daughter, and when he died in some sort of accident, they dumped his body because they didn't want to be suspected of murder or have anyone find out about the existence of their illegitimate grandchild. Decades later, a detective followed this lead and interviewed the woman Bristow thought was the boy's mother, only to find out that she did have a son who died in an accident in 1957. However, more records prove the boy in the box couldn't have been her child.
It was a scandal. What?
Bristow thought the boy in the box could have drowned after falling in a lake, despite having multiple head injuries, because the bottom of the child's feet and the palm of his hand were wrinkled as if they had been rotted in water for an extended period of time. Investigators were unable to determine if the boy had been submerged in water before or after his death, but they ruled the cause of death as a blunt force trauma to the head, not drowning. Thank you. In addition to his wrinkled soles and palm, the medical examiner found the child had small clumps of hair from his head stuck to his body, reinforcing the doctor's belief the boy had been wet around the time of his death. In addition to finding evidence, the boy in the box had been underwater around the time he died. Doctors who examined his body discovered many signs of prolonged abuse. With the help of x-rays, a doctor determined the child had probably been between the ages of 3 and 5, but he weighed just 30 pounds and stood at only 40.5 inches tall.
He was short.
According to a medical examiner, the boy in the box had the body of a child who was just over 2 years old, and the x-ray showed evidence of arrested growth. The child's body was covered in bruises, his lips were dry and bloody, and he was so I don't know how to say that word.
Anemic?
His ribs were showing through his skin. Examiners also found evidence the child may have had an eye infection that was treated with medical prior to his death. Due to the cold weather in Philadelphia around the time police unearthed the boy in the box, the medical examiner was able to pinpoint his exact time of death, saying it could have occurred days or weeks before the discovery.
Do not eat the marker!
Investigators surmised someone had cut off most of the child's light brown hair around the time of death. When they discovered the boy, tufts of his own hair were stuck to his body. However, according to medical examiners, the person who cut the boy's hair had done so in a rushed and haphazard manner. Reportedly, there were 4 distinct bruises on the child's forehead, as well as signs of a cerebral hemorrhage? Law enforcement then theorized the cause of death may have been accidental. Whoever trimmed the hair with clippers could have inadvertently applied too much pressure while holding child's head in place. A Philadelphia barber came forward shortly to say he was certain he'd cut the child's hair approximately 1 week prior to the police found the boy. The barber maintained the boy had come into the shop with his older brother and then left unharmed. The barber then directed authorities to an area called Strawberry Mansion, citing it as where the boy lived. Investigators followed the lead but made no further.
Hold on, I'm gonna just squeeze your head so tightly that you die.
This is an interesting one. He may have been raised as a girl. Another popular theory about the boy in the box is someone who had raised him as a girl, which is why investigators had difficulty pinpointing his identity. One of the biggest proponents of this theory is Frank Bender, a forensic artist who co-founded the Vidocq Society, a private group of skilled professionals who are dedicated to solving crimes. According to Bender, the reason someone cut the child's hair around the time of his death was to hide the fact he had been raised as a girl. Bender also said pictures taken of the boy in the box showed evidence someone had plucked the child's eyebrows before or after his death that indicates someone had altered the boy's appearance to make him appear more feminine. Bender drew a sketch of what he thought the boy in the box would have looked like with long hair and bangs. In an effort to help his identity, the child misrepresent his gender, and it shows a picture here, but you can't see it. Just imagine. So you know what the picture mm-hmm. like the boy looks like, right? Just imagine that with long hair. Okay. The person who found his body waited a day to contact police. Well, police didn't discover the boy in the box until February 25th, 1957. A 27-year-old student at LaSalle College told law enforcement he came across the boy when he was chasing a rabbit, but he didn't contact the authorities because he thought the body was a doll. College student said he decided to call the police the next day when he learned a New Jersey child who later proved not to be the boy in the box had gone missing. Eventually, investigators learned Frederick, whom they initially considered a suspect, didn't immediately contact law enforcement because he had been spying on girls at a nearby school, not chasing a rabbit when he found the boy. Man.
Hold on.
What a guy.
Let me finish stalking these girls real quick. And then I'll deal with the dead kid.
Yeah. Priorities. He may have been... These are just all theories, I'm pretty sure. He may have been the son of a carnival worker. In 1961, Philadelphia investigators questioned Kenneth Dudley and his wife, Irene Dudley, to determine if the boy in the box had been one of the middle-aged couple's 10 children. Mr. Dudley was an carnival worker. So the entire family traveled up and down the East Coast as he looked for work. However, the Dudleys came to an attention of law enforcement when one of their children, 7-year-old Carl Ann, died as a result of neglect, malnutrition, and exposure. Instead of burying the child's body in a cemetery, the couple wrapped their daughter in a blanket and placed her body in a wooded area in Virginia. Authorities learned 7 of the Dudleys 10 known proper burial. Investigators to suspect the boy in the box had one of their sons. However, after questioning the Dudleys and investigating their movements in 1957, law enforcement officials in Philadelphia determined the couple, while neglecting parents, were not connected to the boy in the box.
Dun dun dun.
How these are there? Oh my god. This next theory is he may have been a Hungarian refugee. I don't know where people get these. Hungarian, yes.
How many theories are there? Hungarian
refugee. I don't know. One, two.
Why don't you do this last one and don't do any more?
Okay. Years after police found the child's body, fingerprint expert Bill Kelly theorized the boy in the box may have been one of the many Hungarian refugees who came in America in the 1950s. Kelly developed the theory after he saw a newspaper article published in 1956, the year before the discovery, about people who had recently relocated to the United States from Hungary. A picture of Hungarian refugees accompanied the article. One of the images, immigrants in the photo looked remarkably similar to the boy in the box. Kelly followed up on this theory on the basis police were unable to identify the boy. There were no records of existence due to his status as a recent immigrant. However, after going through more than 11,000 passport photos, Kelly tracked down the Hungarian boy from 1956 and learned the child was alive and well living with his family in North Carolina.
Is that it?
There is so many more.
The kid was actually Jesus.
The kid was Jesus. Proven fact. What do you think? What do you think happened?
Probably the first one where, like, the mother bought him. That seems like the most likely.
Probably.
What do you think? What do you think?
I think that... I think probably the first one. Because we know it's not the Hungarian one, right. Obviously. I don't... They prove some of them weren't real.
Right.
I think that one is probably the correct one.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm stupid, so I don't know.
What do you think of the Axeman?
He likes
jazz.
He just loves jazz so much. kind of jazz it. Is that actually what it
yes,
said?
Yes, it said jazz it.
Did he say that, or was it just something?
Oh, no, it was put in the letter that he wrote to the newspaper that you must jazz it.
So he himself said
yes.
Jazz it.
He turned jazz into a verb.
I don't think I can hate him after that.
Oh, did I tell you that all of the people he killed were Italian immigrants? Oh, no, yeah.
Guess he didn't look like Italians.
I guess not. They were all Italian grocers. How many grocery stores so were there? Italian...
Why did Italian people have axes in their houses?
I cut their bread somewhere. Didn't like everybody have like a fireplace?
I don't know. Oh my god, is the axe?
Oh my god! I mean, he did say he would be flying over.
Oh my god!
Oh my god! We figured it out.
We are so smart.
Santa and his jazz.
It's a proven fact. Santa likes jazz music.
Proven fact. I don't care how correct it is, but it is now a proven fact.
We are
so amazing at what we do. Jobs.
So we figured it out.
We figured out the mystery. Oh my god, he's Santa. He flew over in his sleigh and instead of having his bag, he had the boy in the box. It all connects.
We made a connection in the last one too, didn't we?
Yes. What did you call it? The goat man. It's a goat man and his toy box.
But we do. It's a good time.
Shut up. Not you.
Love it. Oh, okay. I was like, what did I do?
Okay, but I have to go edit.
Because you're dying.
Yeah, because I'm a stupid dog.
Hey, don't
worry. Do you know how many times I yell at her at night?
No.
Okay. Well. Yeah, this has been Ghosts, Killers, and Cults.
What a fun weekend.
I'm Spencer.
I hate my life.